Five, Kurt, with regard to the further investigation on the on-call pay.
Okay, so this is memo that I presented about 3 weeks ago, and we didn't take action on it. At that time, when I included it in the board packet was the letter from the member from the employer, which isn't in the board packet, but I have it here. Anybody needs to refer to it.
Can you remind me? I read this last night, and since I don't remember why, what was the more information we wanted? Because the memo doesn't say why it came
back.
Why
we put it off? It was because we were awaiting a ruling in the AB 197 lawsuit that we thought might
affect it.
Impact it. So
thank you.
Which it did not.
We have this?
Yes, you have it somewhere already. You probably don't need it again. It's only three.
So I won't go through the entire memo again, but we did investigate what the pay was for and when they received it and when they earned it, and the recommendation is that it should be included in the calculation of the retirement allowance. The last thing that we didn't address was that because the compensation is paid in this way, which happens not just in this case, obviously, where an additional pay item will be increased in the final year, there is inevitably an increase in the unfunded liability. And if that is your concern, then the solution is not to exclude the pay item if it's legitimate, but to set the policy for paying off the unfunded liability. And that is, you know, within the board's authority to do that. So if the employer creates the unfunded liability with their pay practice, you can accelerate the payment of that. There's no reason. See, the employer gets a short-term benefit by awarding the pay, but paying it off over 18 years. You could eliminate that short-term benefit by accelerating the repayment of the unfunded liability.
And that's something that probably would be best if we discuss. We're going to have the actuaries back for the second meeting in January and talk about our funding policy at that time, and that would be a good time to discuss issues such
right.
as this.
So if there's interest in that, we'll tell the actuary to address it, and if there's not, we don't.
Does that mean we do it on a case-by-case basis, or?
We'll discuss it in January.
No, I understand that, but if I'm supportive of including this in final compensation, it's $56,000 unfunded, not a lot of money. I agree. Let's not make a decision today. But if we make that decision in January, then do we tell? Can we put a time frame on it, like for the last 3 years? Or I'm just trying to figure out. This would be an easy one to pay off right away. But what our total unfunded liability is, and rather than 18 years. So when we discuss that, can we look at it in terms of case by case and aggregate?
Yes.
I just want to look
we
at
can
it.
Do both.
Yeah.
Yes.
I will say that, I mean, the reason something like this has never been done before, I mean, we haven't done it before, is that it is some extra work to capture this extra salary and calculate the unfunded liability on an individual basis. Now, because of our policy to look for these pay spikes and to analyze them, we're already doing most of the work.
Well, maybe going forward. I'm not saying let's look at everybody way
exactly.
in the past.
We wouldn't look back. It would be the people we've already been analyzing and the people we will have to analyze in the future.
Post AB 197 retirees.
I'll move that we authorize staff to adjust the retirees' benefit to fully include the on-call pay.
Second. You go ahead and second it.
Please.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor? I'm sorry, Harvey.
I just want to add another comment for the record. This may all be affected by the outcome of the pending litigation. So, and the member should be told that as well. So everybody should be put on notice that we're taking this action at this time, subject to whatever may come down in the litigation.
Well, they should also, not just particular to this member, but any retiring members who are having
it should be standard language
included in their calculation.
Are we giving them a notification of that type of a qualification?
I'll have
not
to check.
Not everybody.
I can't recall how the motion was phrased, but my polite suggestion might be that the maker of the motion consider adding the qualification that Harvey stated, because I think that all bets are off once that
I'll add that qualification to the motion.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to understand the qualification. So what, in effect, we're saying, if this motion goes through, we're going to recalculate this pension, and the member's going to get a higher amount, okay, and then the court is going to say something in mid-December, and so how does it impact this particular member, whatever the court says?
We don't know.
What we'll do is, in the letter that we sent to this member, we'll explain today's decision, and we'll add a disclaimer in there that explains that there's a pending litigation, that we don't know what the outcome will be, but the outcome may impact the calculation for this retiree, just as it would for other retirees.
So we think the outcome of the court case could affect us changing people's pensions?
We don't know.
That's a subject we'll have more discussion of in closed session.
Okay.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
I had a question on, as I look at, aside from the motion and this employee's issue, as I look at questions three and four, items three and four in the analysis on page two, this is the, is there fraud against the system, and is there any basis to exclude the item as an improper increase? I keep coming back to the example that we previously talked about, which is the Department of Health Services rotation, where the department has apparently conceded, at least from publicly available sources that I've read, that the on-call time that was going to be utilized in any given year would be allocated solely to those employees who were at or near retirement. That is, by design, that system rewarded those employees in their final year of employment with on-call pay that was not regularly available to everybody in the unit working on the same basis, working the same hours. Why isn't that, either in three or four, a reason to exclude that comp?
That's not what happened for this individual.
Let Karen respond.
Because that case you're talking about, we're still, that they got a disclaimer, right, when we sent that letter.
Yes.
Yeah, they got it. Because it was available to everybody, Scott, but he just took it all. Or everybody said, you go ahead and take it. So that's still pending, because that's what we did our motion on, right? And so we're still waiting to hear what the court said on that specific case.
That is an issue in this very litigation. And we heard in open court the attorneys for the employees stating that their argument is that their employees are entitled to that amount being included, even under the situation that you were describing. So at the moment, we're under the stay order, and we
right.
can't make any changes.
Yeah, and I'm not here, you know, rattling sabers to try to advocate change today. Obviously, it's not on the agenda, but I guess I'm just trying to. I can't reconcile these two, because I had a different understanding of the process by which the employees were getting the on-call pay in the final year of employment. And I guess I can be disabused of that idea, but for the moment, from what I've read, and at least, as I say, from publicly available sources, this was a planned way to essentially, forgive the word, but spike the comp in the final year of employment. It seems so blatantly obvious, it drives me crazy. And I'm wondering, if you did the same analysis in three and four, why isn't that a misrepresentation of the employee's actual final year? That's where I'm really struggling with it.
You're not talking about this particular
I'm not talking about right. this employee. I'm talking about
this
question in the memo, the analysis, as it applies to a situation where, if my facts are correct, and that was a department policy that was designed solely to benefit employees in the final year of their employment. Why isn't that wrong? Why isn't that a fraud on the system? That's my consternation.
I think it's certainly a closer case than this particular one.
Right. I'm not suggesting this case. I and get the analysis.
Minds can disagree reasonably on whether or not that's fraud. It's certainly intentional. It's certainly...
I think it's more improper than it is fraud.
It's gaming.
And it's like, you know, I not having been an employee of health services, but it isn't so much a policy. It's just like somebody's got to fill on call. Oh, Johnny over there wants it. I don't want to be on call this month. I don't want to be on call next month. And Johnny seems to want it. So it's sort of an informal kind of thing. But it's improper in my... in my field.
Yeah, it could.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's fraud.
I suspect it's not written down anywhere, but my guess is, if, and it would probably be useful to look at, if you looked at a five-year window, let's just take the last 5 years, and we looked at that department and those employees.
Can we hold on just a second? Harvey, is this? Do you want to say something with regards to the propriety of discussing these issues in open session?
You know, this is the subject of the pending litigation, a specific complaint and intervention that was filed in the litigation by PDOC, and therefore I think we're probably better off discussing it in closed session as part of our discussion of the litigation globally. No, don't mean to interrupt, but I think it would be wiser for us to have a full confidential discussion with counsel on the legal issues when we're in closed session talking about the litigation, which is agendized for today.
I'm fine with that. I was staying away from the PDOC discussion, the doctor's discussion. I was looking at a different on-call situation that I view as materially different than the doctor's situation. But
well, that also is part of the pleadings filed by another group in the AB 197 litigation, so it's all wrapped. The whole our policy on call is wrapped up in the litigation and will be determined by the court at some point.
Richard,
yeah, well, I'm more in tune with what Scott started saying at the beginning, because I Harvey and Karen, I have a disagreement about these old rules. I think it does have it, and I don't mean to talk about this particular case or any particular one in whole, but I do think we need an open board discussion about what it is and all that to make sure we're on the same page. I mean, I'm hearing arguments about not doing stuff, and I can remember when we gave a bonus to the department head managers, and we talked the same type of talk. Well, we know it's really to inflate their pension. You know, people got religion years later about it, and we don't need to get religion years later about some of this stuff. I mean, there's some clear-cut things. The point of it is in other media, which is public contact context, things were said by people who had the authority to say things, okay, that indicated clearly this was meant to enhance the pension. I mean, that, you know, if they'd never been said, it would have been more speculation, but I read it in the media. Like, oh, yeah, we do that. That's like pleading guilty. I don't know if there's like, you know, a nolle contendere or something on the end, but Jesus. You know, I think we need a public discussion, because I took these examples, we can do something when someone has obviously manipulated to enhance their pension. Not enhance the entire group, just to enhance their pension. That's the wrong part of it. You know, that an individual gets something that's really a group benefit, or different rules apply to an individual. And I think that's what it is. But I, not forsaking the court, I think a good public discussions are very valid for this. So everybody understands where our philosophy is, maybe, about it. Even if we have a disagreement with the current law, I worry about the message it sends when we talk and then we go into executive session and we never, you know, talk it out.
Well, we're 2 weeks out from a court decision, and whether it's appealed or not, I think we can have the discussion, but I think we should have it at least with some more information. I don't disagree with what you're saying, Richard, that it would be nice to have that, but it just seems once we know what the court decision is and what some parties will be doing, then it's a more robust conversation, and maybe we have more facts at our, and we can set those policies. I mean, if it was a long way off, maybe, but we're 2 weeks out. So I just think we should wait until we get that decision. Well, the hearing's 2 weeks out, the decision right. shortly thereafter, by the end of the year. But I think it could be put on the agenda for early January to have that conversation.
Okay. We took action. Okay, we can move on to item six.
We didn't vote.
Oh, we didn't?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, I abstained.
It was two abstains.
That's right, we voted and then you had the question. Abstains and
was, you know, see, we were having a discussion. We already decided the issue. What the heck, man?
Okay.